Hi, I'm Kim Chakanetsa, and this is The Comb, a BBC World Service original podcast. Each week, I comb the continent for stories that matter. The thin line between prosperity and destitution is a theme I explored in my conversation with the newly blind girl, as she calls herself, Eve, a couple of episodes ago. How a case of random bad luck can see your life utterly transformed, can change you from a happy, secure, active member of society to someone completely vulnerable, one of the marginalized. In the next two episodes, I'm exploring a different kind of marginalization. And I'm joined by my colleague in Zambia, Mutuna Chanda. Mutuna, hi.
Hi, Kim.
Mutuna is a journalist based in Lusaka and a good friend of The Comb. If you listen to our episode Without a Trace about missing people in Zambia, you'll have heard his name in the credits. And I was picking your brain again, Mutuna, for what stories aren't getting enough attention at the moment. When you told us about a change you've seen on the streets in Lusaka, which has a particular significance to your own life.
It's something I've noticed the last few years. I think most people will be familiar with the sight of people begging at the sides of roads, especially in big cities. But there's been a change I've noticed, which has been troubling me. And it's that there seem to be more and more children on the streets.
When you say more children on the streets, are they out begging?
Yes, they're often begging. And very often it looks like they're sleeping on the streets as well. There are lots of reasons why a child might end up homeless. Maybe their family can't afford to care for them, or their home is unsafe due to abuse, or maybe they have been orphaned. But for them to be at the point that they're out on the streets suggests that they have not been able to find help anywhere else.
And that's concerning for any of us. But I know that for you, this really hits home.
Quite simply, I could have been one of those children. I was orphaned when I was very young. The same kind of age as many of the kids that I see begging. But in my case, even though I lost my parents, there was never really a question of me being destitute. And I look at those kids and I think, how is it that our lives ended up so different? It got me thinking about the burden that my relatives took on in order to protect me when I was vulnerable. What did it take for me to be okay? And why isn't that happening for these kids?
So that's what we are exploring through two dramatically contrasting stories, starting with part one, Mutuna's own story, and meeting the woman who stepped in and ended up as a second mother to him. And then in part two, you'll hear Vasco's story about how he fell through the cracks and ended up as one of those children on the streets fighting just for survival.
This is The Comb.
Ye ni The Comb.
The Comb, no.
Ni The Comb.
The Comb.
Let's maybe start at the beginning, Mutuna. Where did you grow up? Where was home for you?
I spent my childhood in many places. So I'm the second child of my father, but my mother's first and only child. So I have an older sister and a younger brother, but we all have different mothers.
And are you close? Would you say you're close-knit family?
Yes, we are close. When my father was alive, he raised us all together.
And what was your dad like, Mutuna?
So my dad, he was a very jovial person. I remember that he used to like joking a lot. And I think I sort of get a little bit of my sense of humor from him. But then he was also a firm person, a disciplinarian also.
Tell me a little bit more about your mother. I mean, what was your mother like?
I think she was a very sweet person. She was firm, first of all, but then she really wished the best for me. She was extremely beautiful. I mean, I look at her pictures. She had a great sense of fashion, a great sense of style. People tell me I got her eyes and her nose.
If you want to see for yourself, check The Comb Facebook page. I'll be posting some pictures there.
But yeah, she was a very, very beautiful woman.
Mutuna's parents split up when he was still very young, so he grew up moving between the different households, with both parents still absolutely central to his life.
To be honest, I felt it was normal because that is what I grew up seeing. So for me, it wasn't unusual. Of course, I think I used to ask from time to time why my mother and father were not together.
But it was a very happy childhood.
But when Mutuna was 8 years old, things changed forever. How did you come to lose your parents?
My father, he died quite young. He was 35, about to turn 36. And at the time, I was 8, about to turn 9. We lived in Lubumbashi, in Zaire then. He had been posted...
Mutuna's father, Benson, had been posted to Lubumbashi in the DRC, then called Zaire, in order to work as Vice Consul General at the Zambian embassy there. When he suddenly fell ill, he was taken back to Zambia, to a hospital in Kitwe.
Which is in the Copperbelt province of Zambia. And then he was never to come back.
Mutuna and his sister were at school in Lubumbashi at the time.
I remember the day very vividly. My sister and I were in school, and the driver from the embassy came to pick us up. The school principal came and fetched us from our classes. And then we were told, oh, you have to go home. That was the last time I walked out of that school. We went into the car, the driver took us home. When we arrived home, I found that my father's younger brother had packed his belongings or his clothes, and our clothes were pretty much packed. And then he told us, oh, we're going back to Zambia. Your father is quite sick, but he would like to see you. I was so excited that I was going to see my father. That's how we started off the journey by road from Lubumbashi to Kitwe.
At the hospital in Kitwe, Mutuna's uncle, Boyd, went inside, leaving the children in the car. Looking back now, Mutuna can see clues in his uncle's behaviour, which he didn't understand at the time.
So, curiously, he went in without wearing sunglasses, but he came out wearing sunglasses. He told us he has gone to Ndeke. So we went to Ndeke, but I was still very excited. For me, him wearing sunglasses wasn't off. When we got to Ndeke, all the curtains were closed and there was nobody home. I still didn't realize there was something amiss. But my sister at that point picked it, that there was something wrong. She became a little bit gloomy. And then I was like, hey, cheer up. We're going to see Dad. He must be at Grandpa's place. You know, she was withdrawn, but she wanted to believe me, but also wanted to believe her instinct. So I don't know to this day if she played it out to sort of comfort me, or she still was conflicted about whether or not Dad was still alive.
But when they reached their grandparents' house, the truth finally became clear.
When we went to where my grandparents lived, as we went closer to the home, I just saw a tent and I could hear from a distance people crying. And that's when it hit me that my father had died.
And Mutuna, what impact did that have on you, losing your father?
I didn't fully understand it, to be honest. First of all, my father's funeral was sort of the first ever funeral I had ever attended. My father's body is the first ever dead body I had seen, apart from what we used to see in the movies. I was a little bit confused about what death meant, because I remember that a month or two after he had died, I still thought that we were going back to Lubumbashi so that I could go and play with my friends. I could sort of go back to the old school that I was at. At that point, I didn't know that I was never going to see him again, you know. So him dying sort of, he sort of left me with many questions about death, which I sort of came to understand much, much later.
Mutuna and his sister never did go back to that school. While Mutuna struggled to get his head around the permanence of his loss, the nature of his life was instantly transformed. Working for the diplomatic service had entitled Benson to certain perks, which the whole family had enjoyed. Perks like a big house and places at an international school. With his death, all those privileges were instantly cut off. Having lost his home in Lubumbashi, Mutuna was moved around between family, before eventually going to live full-time with his mother Sylvia and her new husband in Lusaka. But just a few years later, that home and family was ripped apart as well, as Mutuna suffered a second devastating loss.
So my mother was also ill. I remember that at the time, I was leaving Lusaka to go to Kitwe on a holiday. I left my mother ill. I couldn't quite figure out what the problem was then, but she had lost a lot of weight. I had just written my grade 7 exams. She was quite frail at the time I was leaving, but then I told myself, this is just one of those illnesses. She'll get out of it.
Mutuna had gone to Kitwe to enjoy a holiday with his uncle's family.
Before my holiday ended, somebody came to pick me up. My cousin from my mother's side came to pick me up. And basically they came with the same story, which was told to me when my father died, that your mother is very sick and she would like to see you. And I didn't buy it.
Remembering that long journey years earlier, excited to see his father, but gradually realizing the truth that he had died, Mutuna felt certain this time he knew what was happening and he was determined to be told the truth.
I remember crying while packing my clothes because I knew something had happened. And I was like, tell me the truth and I'll be okay with it, because I've been told this story before. When my father died, I was told that he wanted to see me. He was very sick, but when I got there, I was told that he had died. So tell me the truth. And then she felt she had no option on the bus and she told me, okay, Mutuna, your mother died around 14 hours today. From there on, I was calm. I even stopped crying.
At that moment, through the cruel, random bad luck of illness, Mutuna became an orphan. According to World Bank Open Knowledge, Africa has around 12 million orphans, most under the age of 15. For children who've been depending on their parents for care and protection, it's a moment of extreme vulnerability, with most state welfare systems lacking the resources to effectively step in. In the case of those children Mutuna's been seeing on the streets of Lusaka, many have lost their homes, their adult protection, safety and stability. But for Mutuna, things were different.
At both points of my two losses, the death of my father and that of my mother, I had relatives from both my mother's and father's side all volunteering to take me in.
So there was never a question of you guys finding yourselves on your own?
Not at all. It was never a question of us not having where to go. It was a question of choosing, basically, which family would go and live with. And that family also welcomed me with open arms.
So I know you were looked after by quite a few people over time, but when you were 8, you moved in with the lady who became most like a second mother to you, Florence.
Yes, so this was my dad's brother, Boyd, who is now late, and his wife, Florence. They already had a daughter, Mushinge, and took in both me and my sister, Chungu. I lived with them for close to 1.5 years, and now I call Florence mum. I still consider Florence to be my mum, and I see her whenever I can, but now that I'm an adult and a father, I maybe think differently about what she did for me, and I've started wondering about the sacrifices and the adjustments that she made for me. I've never really asked her about what that time was like for her, so for the com, I'm going to visit. So I went to track down Mum, Florence, for a different kind of catch-up to what we're used to. I thought I was going to find her at home, but got redirected to the school where she was working, despite it being her day off.
Go ahead.
Whenever I get to the school, I always receive a very loving welcome. She always likes to show off.
This is Shanda. Hi.
So when are we starting?
It's a recorder. We started already.
So I go right in it.
No, I was just recording the welcome.
Okay, I'm Florence Nkuma, Mrs. Chanda. I was born here in Chingola. I grew up in Kitwe. So really, Kitwe is my home. But I found myself here and here I am now.
So you took me and my siblings in. So I was 8, about to turn 9. Now, I've been thinking back to that time and trying to re-explore some of my memories. And when you took us in, you were about 27, due to turn 28 that year.
Oh, really? 28, hey.
Yes, yeah, 27, about to turn 28 that year.
And 28, I was looking after all of you.
Yeah. Okay. It shocks you, right?
Yeah, it does.
Even though she was still young, Mom says it was very natural for her to take in extra children.
I'd say it wasn't something strange because I think the way we were brought up when we were young, I remember very well when I was maybe like a teenager, my dad's best friend actually had passed on. He had to bring in one of his friend's son to come and live with us. So I think because of that, without realizing, we were trained to live with so many other people, regardless of who they were, whether they were our relatives or not.
Right.
And so when you came in, for me, I think it wasn't something really new.
Mm. Explain to me the relationship between the brothers, your husband and my dad.
Oh my God. Okay. They seemed like twins, so to say.
Yeah.
In spite of the distance, like the time your dad was in Lusaka.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every time there was some good soccer match,
mm-hmm.
my husband would travel to Lusaka.
Mm-hmm.
And when your dad was given a diplomatic position in Congo,
yes,
our home became his second home.
Yeah.
He didn't have to tell us that he was coming.
Yeah. He'll just arrive.
He'll just arrive and say, hi, hi, hi. Hey, Boyd. Boyd was my husband's name. Hey, Boyd, let's go for a drink.
Yeah.
And off they would go.
Yeah.
So they were like inseparable.
And it wasn't just his brother who my dad was close to. Speaking to Mom, it's clear that there was a real affection between the two of them as brother-in-law and sister-in-law as well.
Yeah, we had a very good relationship.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very kind man.
Yeah.
A generous man. We got along very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
My sister Chungu stayed with Mom and Uncle Boyd while my dad was trying to get her a place at a school in Lubumbashi. And it seems like my dad appreciated Mom's way with the kids.
Chungu was normally a very quiet girl
mm-hmm.
who never spoke a lot. And she was naturally like that, you know, like she's scared of something. So when she came to live with me for it.
When my dad came to pick her up, he found she wasn't only happy, but she seemed to have found new confidence while living with Mom.
She was so excited like that, you know, mm-hmm. telling your dad so many stories. And then we'll be going to the village. My aunt is having a wedding and I'm going to be the flower girl and all that. And so when your dad came back home and said, was asking like, Mlamu, what have you done to Chungu?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, I got scared that, what has this girl told? And then he says, I've never seen Chungu so bubbly.
Yeah.
I've never seen Chungu so open. What have you done? And you know, I didn't know what I had done because I was treating her just like I was treating Mshinge.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in a way, Chungu opened up realizing, oh, this is home as well.
Yeah.
When my dad was seriously ill in hospital, Mom went to visit along with other relatives. She was just 27 at the time, but he had an important request he wanted her to understand.
I think he knew that these are the people who could look after my children. He was on his hospital bed and he told his relatives he wanted to talk to me. So when I came and then he started mumbling your name, mumbling Chungu's name, I couldn't get what he was saying, you know?
Yeah, because he was quite sick at the time.
Yeah, he was quite sick. And each time the elders, like from your side, would come nearer to say they want to hear, okay, let me hear what he's saying. He wouldn't say anything. He would be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get close to him, he would mention your names. Mm-hmm. So we thought, oh, he wants the children to come back, mm-hmm. you know, home and see him because the time he was sick, he was still in Lubumbashi.
Yes.
So I told them, oh, he's mentioning Chungu's name and Mutuna's name.
So they said, okay, let's bring the kids back. So, but it was only afterwards when he had passed on, I was talking to my mother and I said, you know, you wanted to tell me something about Chungwa and Mutuna. So my mom said, you don't know what he wanted to say. I said, no, I don't. He was telling you that look after my children. Mm. And I got it there and then, and I didn't even have to ask anybody to say, what should I do here? Mm-hmm. I just told my husband, these kids are coming to live with us.
Wow. Wow. Okay. All right. Okay. Huh. That's quite heavy.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay.
It was a difficult time for Zambia economically. From the end of Kenneth Kaunda's time in power, there were food shortages, high prices, and unemployment. Mum really had to hustle to make ends meet.
Those times, really, you had to do some extra work. Mm-hmm. Okay, I was working as a government teacher, and I remember that time, I'd work for 4 hours and then you'd go off. Mm-hmm. So in my free time in the afternoon, I would do some business. Mm-hmm. I remember one very well where I used to go and buy some dressed chickens.
Yes.
From Sabina, mm-hmm. a hybrid company.
Yeah.
I remember very, very well. I would buy like 6 chickens, mm-hmm. you know, just 6. Mm-hmm. I would move from Kitwe to Sabina.
Yes.
To buy 6 chickens. Okay. And then when I get back, I would sell 2 chickens.
Okay.
The 4 chickens, I would keep them for Sundays.
Okay.
And then these 2 chickens, the price I would sell them for would buy the 6 chickens again.
Wow.
So basically, I wasn't buying those chickens to make a profit. I was buying those chickens so that my children on Sunday could eat chicken.
After church.
After church.
I remember Sundays were special. Sundays were special.
So yes. Those are the puzzles that I did with the business. Mm-hmm. I had to travel and I couldn't get more. My husband wasn't working at times. At times he's working. But at least I wanted to make sure that the kids at home at least had some chicken mm-hmm. relish on Sunday.
As a child, I knew some of what was happening to make things work for me and Chungu. Now I'm looking back and I'm 40 years old and I have kids of my own. I wonder how Mom dealt with raising children who had been used to a different environment, different rules and different approaches to discipline.
When you talk about a naughty little boy, and this is a state in which I came. So I used to land myself in trouble a few other times. Mm-hmm. And because I'd be naughty, I'd mm-hmm. stray, I'd go. Mm-hmm. But then when I came to Kitwe Ndeke, I didn't fully know the kind of person that you were, you know. Mm-hmm. And even when you raised me, I know I strayed many times, mm-hmm. you know, made many mistakes. But you were not one to raise a hand. How would you put up with so much and not spank? You know, like, you've never beaten me. Mm-hmm. Like, how did that ever happen? Like, how were you so patient, ever so kind? Like, like, just how? How did you manage that?
Okay. I think, you know, I find it so strange when I hear people ill-treating, like, orphans, you know? By virtue of a child losing their mother and father, I mean, it means they're already traumatized, you know, they're already suffering. You know, they have this pain with them. And then you add on the pain, all right? So for me, I don't think I would, in my normal sense, ill-treat a child who's lost their mom and dad, you know? So for me, I would let you, like, scot-free. Maybe if that's going to make you happy. For me, it's okay. When I see you coming back like late in the evening, all dusty and dirty because you've been playing football like the whole afternoon, you'd eat your lunch like in a split of time because you want to go and play football.
Yeah.
I'd let you go and play football, but I'll just tell you, make sure you're back before your uncle comes back.
Yeah.
And then when you're coming back, you're so tired, you know? And then you're so dirty, your legs and your face are the same color. It's so great. And then you'd put your fist on your cheek.
Yeah.
And there you are asleep.
Yeah.
Just in a split of time. We had to wake you up. Okay, it's now time to bath, you know.
Yeah.
For me, I remember that because I loved it.
Yeah.
Because I loved it when I see you all dirty and happy and then, oh, we've won. And then I said, okay, he's happy. So I think for me, the most important thing was to make you happy because I know you were a happy boy with your dad.
Yeah.
And then we make you miserable. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. So I think the most important thing was to make you happy.
In the years since Mutuna went from a dusty football-loving boy to the journalist he is today, Florence has always been at the sidelines, cheering him on.
Oh, he's my pillar now. I'm so proud of him. I've been watching him growing from man, from boy to man, and I've been there for every interview. I remember how he was late for an interview with BBC because he had to get on a bus like late in the night and hike. You know, I'm so proud of him and I wish him much, much more than where he is right now. He is my pillar now.
And Tuna, thinking beyond childhood, can you share at all how being orphaned continued to affect you into adulthood?
It gave me a certain sense quite early on that I developed a survival instinct, especially when my mother, after my mother died, even though I was taken in by my mother's family, my perspective sort of changed. I told myself I needed to work hard in the things that I did because beyond a certain point when people are no longer able to sort of provide for me, I needed to stand on my own and fend for myself. So quite early on, it triggered a sense of survival in me. And I think that's the largest thing that changed. And also, I think I quite learned that like the family was quite accommodating and they extended a certain sense of kindness. So it also taught me in a way that I sort of needed to play my part in terms of contributing to those people who need help, especially when it comes to dealing with my family. So even in my adulthood, I have this sense of duty that I feel that whenever somebody comes calling for help, I should be there to step in. Even before I got married, I used to keep a few people here and there who are part of the extended family. And for me, I feel that I'm sort of paying it back because that second home really gave me a chance at life. If they didn't step in to share the little that they had, people like me wouldn't have been, to be honest. I probably would have been lost. If I hadn't been accommodated, I couldn't have become.
That's what we're going to be exploring in part two. In the next episode, we'll hear from Vasco, whose experience of orphanhood was all about raw survival, and it changed him in ways that he still struggles with.
I didn't know, but I was traumatized, and I was living in shock without realizing it. So my mind quickly adjusted and I became concealed. So I thought I became tough, but then little did I know that I became an animal. I became worse than the people I found. Whatever friend would suggest, I would always say yes. I would say yes because I believed in my head that nobody cared. So why should I care?
This episode was produced by Mary Goodhart, Mutuna Chanda and me, Kim Chakaneta. Mary also did the sound design. Our studio manager is Matt Dean and Piers Lynch is our editor. The Comb is part of the Focus on Africa radio family.